like those numbers. The predicted high today, 40 degrees. It's already 43. Things are going the right way. None too soon after this rough week we had with all those minus temperatures out there, huh? Wasn't that rough stuff? Good afternoon, everybody. Stan Turner. I think we have turned the weather corner here. I certainly hope so. Kyle, you can take that knit cap, that wool cap off one of these months.
I was close to it today.
I know when that thing comes off, we're really turning the corner and getting into the warm stuff. I think you might stick your hat out a little later today.
And, probably.
The hat might come off. It's really good news. Folks, welcome to the show. Yeah, Stan Turner with you here. Thank you so much for being with us here. We're in our 11th year of doing this, and we always try to be predictably unpredictable, bring you things that we hope will inform you and be of interest to you, and yes, even entertain you along the way. The melt is on, as we know now, and we would like to help along that process this noon with a subject that is really hot, both in a topical way, yes, in a tropical way, too. Cuba, C-U-B-A, Cuba. Think about Cuba, and what images come to your mind? Well, yeah, that bearded guy in the army fatigues, Castro, I think is his name. There's sugarcane, beat-out vintage American cars on the streets, Ernest Hemingway up there in the hills, Teddy Roosevelt riding up one of those hills. And then, let's see, there's I Love Lucy and her Cuban beau, Ricky Ricardo, Desi Arnaz, and his Baba Lou. Oh, that hot Cuban music.
A mí se me respeta, porque soy de Cuba.
Cuba, I am Cuba. The island nation, a scant 90 miles off the Florida coast, is much in the news and much on our minds amid efforts to unthaw the more than 50-year freeze on diplomatic relations between the U.S. and Cuba. We are not going to conduct a seminar on Cuban-American diplomacy this hour, no. Rather, we want to introduce you to the island, to its people, to its culture, and yes, its economic resources, too. The whole sweep of what might lie ahead for us as visitors if normal relations, if they are reestablished between our two nations. Yes, indeedy. Well, our good friend and frequent guest, Catherine Watson, is just back from Cuba. Catherine knows the ropes there for sure. She was, for some three decades, the travel reporter, editor, photographer for the Minneapolis Star Tribune. She has been to Cuba. Well, this visit was her fifth, yep. And she can tell us much about the island, its people, and what might lie ahead for us if the old hard lines of the diplomatic freeze begin to melt away. Catherine, welcome back and welcome home from Cuba. Do you hear any music
like that?
Huh?
Oh, yes. Yes, every single restaurant has a band, and you can walk.
Are you talking live band?
Oh yeah.
Oh wow.
Oh, yeah, and then it's also just guys in a corner.
Yeah. I mean,
there's music literally everywhere.
Street buskers all over the place down there. It's great. I have these. I've never been, but I have images, and you're going to paint the word picture for us today. Well, okay, so you've been to Cuba in the last couple of weeks, and President Obama announced efforts to normalize relations between the two countries after that plus 50-year freeze. What's the mood among the Cuban people? You've been there before, so did you detect anything new? Are they running in the streets shouting?
What I heard from everybody, and I asked the same questions everywhere I went, you know, what do you think will happen?
Right.
Do you want the Americans back? And people, like day one, the taxi driver says, everybody everywhere in Cuba wants the Americans to come because it will mean employment and money. But Cuba is not prepared.
In what sense, not prepared?
Not enough hotels. They have pretty good infrastructure now for the tourism they get. They get about 2.5 million people a year. Most of them a third of them from Canada and then Europe.
A
third from Canada.
Wow.
Incredibly cheap charters. All inclusive, including liquor.
Liquor.
The last time I checked was a couple years ago, but it was $1,000 for a week in a top-notch hotel on the beach.
Say that again. How much?
A thousand.
Yankee dollars.
Canadian.
Yeah. Canadian dollars.
At that
Canadian
time.
Dollars
yeah.
At that time. Okay.
So it was even...
Like, yeah, it'd be close. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, but it's they've built tourism without us, and people told me I can't check this. How many Americans were in Cuba on any given weekend in the old days? Like maybe 300,000.
Really? It's a small nation.
Something like that. Yeah,
wow,
I didn't believe
amazing.
It either.
But, a lot of Yankees down there.
It was like a second, you know, an extra state just stuck on there at the bottom.
All right, you've been there this fifth time, but mm-hmm. four times before this, the beginnings or at least discussion of a thaw. How did you get in before? You're a journalist, a working journalist, of course. Was that your ticket in? Or
yes.
How,
yeah. Okay. There's a list, or there was a list, in the Treasury Department, which is the weird part of this whole thing. Our government continues to insist that we can go anywhere. But in Cuba's case, we can go there, but we can't spend any money. That's the real deal.
You can't spend any money. Well, then how do you buy goods? How do you pay for hotels? How do you...
Kind of works. It becomes a ban on travel. It's run through the Treasury Department, and under the Trading with the Enemy Act,
really?
we can't, yeah. That's why we can't go. I believe you can go. But there was a list of allowed people and educators with projects, news people, and a few others were already on that list, and they were considered licensed. Mm-hmm. I spent an awful long time before the first visit trying to get a hold of somebody in the State Department before I found out it was Treasury who would give me the license. And finally, I got somebody after hours, like a janitor in the State Department.
Always, when all else fails, go to the janitor.
Whoever answered the phone finally said, look, you already have a license. That's just implicit. So go. But I didn't want to get press credentials from us or from Cuba.
So. The Cubans do want us to come. They're eager for us to come.
Yeah. They like Americans. People over and over will say, you know, we love Americans, or we have a cousin in Miami, or we have somebody in New Jersey. It's a real bond.
It's not just we like your money. We like the American money. We like the American people. Right?
Yeah.
So that's something I think a lot of us don't realize. The heavy curtain of communism came down, so we're enemies, and they must not like us, and we must not like them.
They got trapped behind that curtain that we helped lower when you get right down to it.
Okay.
And they're nice folks. The other thing, I stayed mostly in Old Havana, which is like 500 years old practically in places. And it is dense with people. It's got the best architectural fabric maybe anywhere in anywhere outside of Europe. And it looks like the Bronx most of the time.
Really?
Yeah. The restored streets are gorgeous.
Right.
And that's where the tourists are.
Those were for
to earn money from tourists.
But you are not a tourist. You are a traveler. You're a travel writer, a great one. You've always said there's a heck of a difference between tourists and travelers, and that means you get off the paths most traveled. You take literally the back streets, the back alleys sometimes, and you advise people, especially going to Havana or Cuba in general, get off the restored streets, go down those dangerous-looking back streets.
Walk a block. In some cases, a block or two off of some big tourist site. And you're looking at falling down buildings that look like they're falling apart, and they're probably not, but they haven't been restored or touched or painted in 50 years. There isn't money, and people have been allowed until 2008. They were allowed finally to change to apartments or to sell houses. Up until then, from 1959 till 2008, people stayed where they were. It was like musical chairs, sort of. You just Where the music stopped, that was where you were living, and that's where you stayed.
Do Cubans detest communism, what it's done to them? Because before it was a dictatorship, but they were under the heel of Batista and his like, and their life probably was no better, maybe worse.
And it was certainly uglier in some ways. Hmm. But people say Batista was bloody. He was awful. That was terrible. But nobody was really expecting the revolution to turn out this strict or this... frozen. Mm-hmm. They weren't expecting an embargo, and it's the embargo that has made it so hard.
You showed me something before airtime today that just absolutely startled me. They still have rationing. People are rationed, the amount of goods they can get. Tell us about that. My goodness. Remember, Britain had rationing, people don't realize, into the 1950s, long after the end of World War II.
And we did during the war.
Right, but the Cubans still have
it. They have it, and they have it for a slightly different reason. It's to make sure that everybody gets some food. And the amount they get now isn't much. It's the government will acknowledge and has in a couple places. This is not like a living wage. That's not a living meal plan. But it's basic food so that people don't starve.
What's on the list? What's on the ration?
The list is, this is the basic core: sugar, rice, beans, half a bottle of cooking oil per month, 4 ounces of coffee, a pound of spaghetti, a kilogram of whole milk powder, and 5 eggs per month per person in the household. If you've got sick people or old people or children, you can get more eggs and more milk powder.
Do you carry a ration card around with you?
They have ration books.
They have ration books.
Ration books. And then for sort of staples like beans and rice and flour, you go to one warehouse that you're assigned. Mm-hmm. For meat, you go to a different one. And then at bakeries, you can get a daily ration of bread, but just certain ones.
Lenin and Marx and their ilk told us that communism, yes, it's a classless society.
You
so
bet.
There would be no wealthy class at the top and no poverty-ridden class at the bottom.
Right.
Everybody would be equal.
And it started out that way. That was the idea behind this revolution,
too. It's baloney, though, isn't it?
Well, in practice.
Yeah.
People go out, you walk mostly in the back streets. Nobody's got cars, you just walk. So people walk all over the place, and they go to little tiny corner markets or little kind of 7-Eleven shops, which have maybe 5 bottles of pop and some small things. Sometimes they're out of ice cream, and then the next day the ice cream comes. Anyway, you walk looking for stuff, either the food you need, the food you're going to pick up at the ration depots, or stuff you run across that you could maybe sell to neighbors. So at bottom, people are looking for stuff they can recycle and sell. People give tips to get services.
Mm-hmm.
Just they get free health care, they get free education right through the university.
Wow.
But if you want to get in earlier than your appointment, or if you want your test results sooner from your doctor, you give a little present.
Okay. We call it a bribe, don't we?
It's because the best salaries in Cuba, the official salaries, are about $40 a month.
$40 a month.
For a doctor.
There is a top class. There is an upper echelon of very wealthy people, right? They're there.
And I think they're probably government, primarily.
that surprises us,
doesn't it, though?
A lot of governments, they have their hand in your pockets anyway, and they just take what they need. More than they need.
They're not doing too badly at the top. But there are people who have nothing, and there are people who have very little, and that's maybe most. But if you know somebody in another country, or if you have a relative in the States, they would send money.
I see.
And that automatically kept a whole lot of people afloat. Now, under the change that Obama announced in December, now Cuban Americans can send in up to $8,000 a year.
Okay.
If your salary's $40 and you're a doctor, picture what it might be
if
you're a restaurant worker.
Bottom, yeah,
but $8,000 is a fortune.
Oh,
the other, so that's already a discrepancy. And then in 2008, when Castro stepped aside and let his younger brother be in charge, it's doubtful who's really in charge. One of the changes was that people could buy and sell cars, which they hadn't been able to do, and buy and sell their houses. So if you happened to be in a big house when the revolution came and froze you in place, you could sell that house, buy a smaller house, and make money. And that's where the differences are starting to be.
Sounds like capitalism to me. As a kind
sounds
of
a lot like
it,
that.
Doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Would it be fair to say, I mean, it's hard to categorize or quantify. Is Cuba a poverty-ridden nation?
Weirdly, yes and no. It looks third world, but they're educated people with health care. It's like first world thinking third world lifestyle.
Wow.
And then there's the countryside, which I wasn't in this time, but I have been in the past.
Well, we'll talk about that. Get your views of that, too. Catherine Watson, just back her 5th trip to Cuba, this time since the announcement by the administration, the Obama administration, along with the help of the Vatican and many others who have worked very hard to try to normalize relations after 50-plus years of a diplomatic freeze, embargoes, and all the rest between the two nations. Catherine Watson gives us a people's eye view of what's really going on over there. We need to look beyond the diplomatic niceties and all of that sort of thing and really look and see what it's like for the people themselves and what it might be like for us if we were given the green light to go over there.
It will be it will be fine right. to go over there.
We'll continue. We'll continue this fascinating conversation with Catherine Watson right after this.
At Hymie's Haberdashery, men never sacrifice fashion for weather. So no matter how cold it gets, you can still spot a Hymie's man by his impeccable taste and the confidence that only comes from a hot lather shave. Hymie's Haberdashery helps men look and feel their best with high-quality clothing cut and styled just for them. Create a look that's uniquely yours with tailored suits, overcoats, hats, and accessories that make winter blush. And at prices that won't melt your wallet. Hymie's Haberdashery, 400 St. Peter Street in downtown St. Paul. Online at Hymie's.
The Valley Bookseller in downtown Stillwater has a monthly event for local mystery writers and fans. Held on the first Wednesday of each month, the Totally Criminal Cocktail Hour always includes a lively discussion and a great time. Reservations are required. The cost $10. Held at the Dock Cafe, appetizers are included. Cash bar available. The upcoming April 1st event features Alan Eskins discussing his latest book, Life We Bury. Call 651-430-3385 for reservations. Valley Bookseller. Great books, great people. 217 Main Street North, Stillwater. You finally found it, that old photograph of your grandmother that you've always wanted to share with your grandchildren, but it's torn, cracked, and faded. Well, don't despair. Bring it in to Images of the Past in Stillwater. They specialize in restoring and preserving memories for future generations. So when you bring your old photos to Images of the Past, you can share that beautiful photograph with your grandchildren. You can see examples at klbbradio.com. Keyword, photo. Think of the future, preserve the past. On Main Street in Stillwater at Images of the Past.
Ready to take a voyage through the sounds and styles of some of the world's greatest musical performers? Hi, this is Mike Martin, host of Martini Mix, and every week I'll bring you timeless greats of music, time-tested artists like Count Basie, Frank Sinatra, Tony Bennett, and many more. I'll bring you the perfect blend of music, nice and cool, served straight up on Martini Mix with Mike Martin.
Martini Mix, each Saturday afternoon from 5 until 7 on Club 1220 KLBB.
We are back. Cuba is the subject. Yes, Cuba. And the lady, our tour guide this time around, Catherine Watson, you know her. Many years, the travel writer, editor, photographer for the Minneapolis Star Tribune. Wonderful observer. What did Sherlock Holmes say? So many of us see, but we do not observe. Catherine Watson observes very deeply and shares those savvy observations with us. Catherine, nice to have you back again.
Nice to be back.
Right. Well, Cuba. You know, I talked about images. What images do you conjure when you think about Cuba? We see some of those old black and white photos and footage from pre-World War II even, that Havana especially was one of the world's great pleasure domes. If you had the bucks, you jumped on a boat and went from Miami over to Havana. Mm-hmm. These great gambling palaces. Yes, there was the backstreet crime, but it was a lot of it was, shades of mobsters and all the rest.
Gangsters. Basically, I mean, real American gangsters.
You're right, right, real ones. Frank Sinatra got caught up in a little dust up in the 50s, didn't he, before the revolution. But we have these images of a lot of glamour. A lot of money, a lot of gambling, a lot of champagne flowing, dangling your feet.
And it was pretty brutal for the ordinary folks.
That's what I want to ask. Are there any vestiges of those so-called pleasure dome days?
Yeah, and the odd thing is they changed some of the names. There are...
to protect the guilty?
Well, the hotel, there's a hotel called Havana Libre, liberal, free Havana.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
That's an old 1950s hotel. Okay. But the real classic is the Hotel Nacional, which is this gorgeous, huge kind of monolith up on a rise of land above the sea. It looks over a seafront walk called the drive called the Malecón. On the Malecón, right below that hotel, is the U.S. Special Interest Section, which is an interesting thing because that's the hotel where the mafia holds some gigantic meeting. I forget its name, but they bring all of the mobsters out of the states, the big names, and they all have this meeting in Havana at that hotel.
When was this?
Early 50s.
I think, yeah, that'd be about probably right.
Yeah, I think it's after World War II.
Okay. Nice accommodations for the boys.
Pretty nice. Yeah. And the hotel is preserved. It's not. Mm. It's a historic place, so it's beautiful. Lots of tour groups go there, and there's a bar where it shows pictures, large pictures, all over the walls. Painted, they're like frescoes, of everybody famous who ever stayed there, including Jesse Ventura. That just stopped me cold.
Excuse me.
but, you know, the political leaders are up there. Che is there. Fidel is there.
And Ventura?
Yeah, he's on a different wall. But
I'll bet he is.
Yeah. But they, and then all the movie stars, tons of movie stars were there, stayed there.
Hemingway looms large up there.
Oh, very. Yeah, he's his Old Man in the Sea won the Nobel Prize. And it's taught in Cuban schools
still.
Still.
Inspired by the fisher people
in
Cuba.
In Cojimar. I interviewed his fisherman.
His hilltop farm, too. We'll talk more about Hemingway and the farm. Hotel Nacional, you advise taking a free walking tour.
Yeah.
Defense tunnels on the front lawn of that hotel?
Yeah.
Tunnels?
That's the part I didn't expect. I thought we'd get a tour of the building, you know, which is very kind of Moorish in style.
Hmm.
And this little tiny white-haired lady was leading the tour, and very elegant and tiny. And I kind of dropped out partway through because I wanted to see the missile tour.
The missile
defense system on the lawn. They still have these defense, because they're on the seafront and above it, they had tunnels where anti-aircraft guns were during the Cuban Missile Crisis. They were so sure they'd be attacked. Cubans were terrified.
Really?
And they didn't get included in the negotiations either. It's sort of U.S. and USSR.
This
but
little white
walk through there. And she turns out, we walk through, and she's been all this delicate telling us about paneling and tile and so on. We get into the tunnels, and she explains it, and her voice just hardened. She explains the whole thing. We get to one point, there's a kind of bay where there would have been an anti-aircraft gun, and you're underground, kind of. And there's a little glass case that has a piece of a U-2 plane that got shot down, you know.
U.S. spy plane.
Yeah, which found the missiles. That was part of the deal. And a uniform. It's just lying up there, blue shirt and blue pants. Mm-hmm. She says, this is the uniform that the militia volunteers wore. That's my uniform.
Whoa.
Yeah, it changes the tone instantly. So I talked with her a little bit afterwards. She's a dyed-in-the-wool fidelista. She volunteered out of college to be in the defense force.
She's a Castroite.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
All the way.
And I said, everyone asked, the Canadians on the tour said, well, what will happen when Fidel dies? Which is not how you start a conversation.
Canadians get to the point.
Yeah. You know, and somebody said, well, why don't you just give Guantanamo back? I know. Because it will be so hard. But I said to her, what will happen? What do you think will happen? Mm-hmm. And she said, I don't know. Nobody knows. They're all old. Fidel is 87 or 88.
Yeah.
Raul, the younger brother, is 5 years younger. She said, I don't like to think of Fidel that way, you know, so old. Mm. I like to remember him as he was.
Fine. She's enamored, isn't she? My. How about that?
Yeah.
And she's conducting tours at the Hotel Nacional,
yeah,
even
and,
to this
and
day.
And it's one of those things where you think, whatever stereotype you have, mm-hmm. a little nice little white-haired lady
yeah.
in a hotel tour,
yeah.
she wasn't.
Wow. What about the people? Do people who do not like Fidel Castro, do not like communism, do they dare speak out?
They don't much.
They don't. Can they? What would happen to them if they do? And some certainly
be really
have.
Bad. The committees for the defense of the revolution, which are on pretty much every few blocks, are little offices, and they're watchers.
Really.
And one lady said they started out as kind of a neighborhood protection thing. But now it's like, it's just people who are your neighbors, and if they don't like you, they
They'll
can report
you
for stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
And
wow.
and sometimes people get turned in.
What sort
not
of punishment?
For that. I don't know.
We,
I don't,
we don't know.
Mm-mm.
Nobody talks about
Nobody
that.
Nobody does
huh?
that.
Wow.
People don't like to, they often, and this particular visit, almost nobody mentioned Fidel, except for young people
mm-hmm.
and this lady.
What do the kids, what do the young people say about Fidel?
Well,
what do we dare say about him?
The young people
after
say stuff like everybody says. You know, you say stuff because it's been their entire lifetimes.
Right.
We had a taxi driver and we asked the same questions. And like, so what do you think will happen? He said, I don't know. Everybody believes what Fidel says. Nobody believes what Raul says.
Really?
And then he laughs.
Oh,
like,
oh, okay.
It's,
is that a wink-wink, ha-ha?
No.
It's,
no. they think Fidel's still in charge.
Okay.
But when I was there, two visits ago, so this would be about 2002, people wouldn't say Fidel's name out loud. They would say him.
Why?
Or he, fear.
Wow.
It's,
you can't say, I love Fidel? You're
you could say that. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, but nobody would criticize.
Really?
Oh,
and, okay, so Big Brother is watching and listening.
In some ways, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah,
okay.
And people feel that. If you believe that And they may be right. If you believe you're watched all the time, mm-hmm. you behave differently and talk differently.
You do. You ate in Cuba. You ate the local stuff. But what's the best food you had?
The best food is Russian.
Russian.
I have to talk about what the city itself, what Havana looks like. Okay. And it is, it's this mix of really old, beautiful buildings that are restored, really old, beautiful buildings that are falling down, pretty much. And then out, as you get along the Seacoast Walk, it gets newer. And up towards the embassy and our embassy and the hotel, it gets quite good. Still in poor repair, but the buildings are 50s. And I'm going to lose my thread here because I want to talk about cars.
Yeah. Well, we were talking about the cuisine. The best food you had in Cuba was Russian.
Most tourists stay in the historic center, and that's where most of the restaurants are. And it looks like free enterprise. But in the historic core, it's not. It's all government run. Farther out, there are restaurants that were secret at one point. They're called paladars. You could cook food in your kitchen and sell it. Basically. And mm-hmm. people would come up to you in the dark streets at night and say, do you want to eat some home cooking? Like, no. And what it was people saying, my mother has a kitchen. And you'd go up to somebody's third floor and have supper. And it was cheaper. And then the government legalized them. Mm-hmm. So you can have a restaurant of your own and give part of the money to it. Mm-hmm. Okay, so we're walking along the seacoast and kind of getting back to old Havana. And here's this restaurant with a Russian name. It's Naza Drogovia. It's like a toast, sort of. Mm-hmm. And we're puzzling this out. A young Cuban guy with kind of light gray eyes, handsome kid, runs across the road. He's wearing a fur hat, a Russian fur hat.
What's
the
temperature?
With a star, about 80.
About 80.
and runs across with a menu and says, this is a new paladar, and talks it up. And it was a long walk back to where we were staying, and we just said, oh, okay, fine. So we walk up three flights in a restored building, because every now and then one is. They've shifted the focus from old Havana to the seafront. And on the top floor is this modern, beautiful bar restaurant. The walls are paved with linen posters. Repros. I mean, you can buy those in Soviet Union, Russia. And good ones. Workers of the World Unite and all kinds of stuff. The decor is red and gray. And everybody's wearing some kind of Soviet-looking thing. And they're all young. And we said, what is this? What is this? The Russian soldiers... Russia had a big presence in Cuba for 30 years. Mm-hmm. You don't send young people anywhere. And they sent men and women. Mm-hmm. And not have them mix with the locals.
That's an interesting way of putting it. Procreation, I suppose, is what we're talking about.
Well, being young, hell. Russian guys are cute, and Cuban women are beautiful, and vice versa.
Wow, wow, wow.
So about 5,000 Russian women married Cubans and stayed on when the Russians left in the 90s. And these young people are descendants of those moms.
Wow.
The restaurant is dedicated to the mothers who stayed on.
That's amazing. Any posters of Khrushchev up there?
No. It's just great 1930s.
Right.
And the food was superb. And we asked about, you couldn't get potatoes anywhere in Havana when I was there. Yeah. They were out.
Right.
No French fries, no nothing.
Okay.
So this restaurant had pork stroganoff, because beef's hard to come by, but pork stroganoff and mashed potatoes.
Folks, when we get to Havana, go native. Go Russian.
Yeah.
I've got to ask you about the cars. That's one of the cliches. Oh, yes. The old American cars. Yeah, from the 1950s, a lot of them, right? The old Buicks and Chryslers.
Everything is... The old ones are before 1959. Because we wouldn't allow imports after the embargo.
Probably not privately owned. Are they taxi cabs or what are they?
A lot of them are taxis in Havana now. And they were, even in 2008, quite a lot. But now it's... You see them, and they're in Havana. You don't see very many that are beat up, except on the back streets. Okay. You see these beautiful restored cars, and there's so many it looks like a car convention.
That'd be a motorhead's dream, wouldn't it?
Yeah. I read something on the internet the other day that one of these cars is about restored is about $60,000.
Wow!
Try and get it home.
You can't drive it, can you?
No, you can't. As you get to the suburbs of Havana, and you get out farther into the countryside, then you see more old cars that aren't restored.
Wow! Wow!
But their estimates are, I think it's like 50 or 60,000 old cars in the country.
The 1950s and the 40s before that, a guy named Ernest Hemingway had a large presence. Well, wherever he went, he had a large presence,
yes,
didn't he?
Yes, he did.
Ask his five wives about that, or four, I guess, four, yeah. Well, he loved Cuba, and
Cuba
loved and loves him.
Still.
Presence.
Yeah.
Tell us about Ernest Hemingway, Cuba, how he's regarded today.
He is a hero. His house, his last home, is a kind of sprawling, nice but not huge ranch house in a suburb of Havana. And it's restored and preserved as it was left when he walked away. And he left, I think, in 60 or 61.
Yeah.
Right before that, he wins the Nobel Prize for The Old Man and the Sea,
yes,
in 1960.
Mm-hmm.
You probably have the date.
Mm-hmm.
And he gives that gold medal to Cuba.
He does.
Yeah, it's in Santiago
de Cuba.
The Nobel
Medal.
Mm-hmm. It's in the church of the patron virgin of Cuba.
Wow.
In Santiago de Santiago, mm-hmm, blank, mm-hmm, blank.
It's okay.
I'm sorry. I've gone totally blank on the entire name.
So many names, so little time.
Santiago de Cuba, and it's the town that San Juan Hill is in at the east end of the island.
San Juan Hill of Teddy,
yes,
Roosevelt,
yes,
fame, or infame. Huh? Wow.
Yeah. Anyway, Hemingway donates his medal, gives it to Fidel, and it ends up in the church. And loved Cuba, and apparently intended to come back.
Mm-hmm.
He was an alcoholic, he's depressed, he's had all kinds of trouble,
mm-hmm,
and left all his books, 9,000 books, his hunting trip, everything stayed the same, right down to the plastic drink glasses on the table between the two main chairs where he and
the real thing.
The real
not
thing.
Not cops, the real,
yeah,
thing.
And real bottles of Coke. Those weren't there this time. It's gone through a major preservation thing that the National Trust, ours, helped with.
Really?
Helped to provide some money.
Isn't that interesting?
Because the Cubans wanted to preserve it and money's an issue.
So there were kind of hands not across the table, but under the table in some cases, huh? In the case of Hemingway,
yeah,
anyway.
Huh? Yeah. And it was certainly public because the National Trust isn't exactly government.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
you
gotcha.
Know. And he's our author, so we can do this.
Hemingway's a Cuba house, Finca Vigia.
Finca Vigia. Lookout Farm.
It means Lookout Farm. Obviously situated on the high ground, very nice. It's something
way
of
out of Havana, but you can see downtown,
beautiful,
distantly. Yeah, and you can see the ocean.
Tell us, it's essentially a museum, as you said now, and they have wonderful, you say ladies guard the place, and they're,
yes,
better than tour guides, huh?
Yeah, because they love him. These are.
What do they love about him, Catherine? What is the attraction?
He's there, same thing I do. I mean, he's a good writer,
yeah,
he's,
yeah,
famous, and he's fascinating. He's just fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
But the guides, it's an odd situation because they don't let tourists come in the house for fear of things being touched.
Oh, yes.
But the windows are all open. So you can go around the house and you look in, and tour guides will take you around. But if you talk to a guide, one of the guards, one of the young women who, mm-hmm, are watching this place, mm-hmm, they'll tell you all sorts of stuff.
Really?
Yeah. This is where he sat when. This is, now, Mary didn't like this. But she did like that.
His last wife, Mary, yeah, Hemingway.
And he, and so on. And Martha didn't, his third, he, uh-huh, didn't like, Martha didn't like it as well. But all kinds of, it's like hearing gossip about someone who maybe left last month.
Huh? That's amazing.
It's fascinating. But he left everything, and I think he did intend to come back.
Just amazing. Hemingway, a heroic status still,
yes,
in Cuba.
Yes.
That's amazing.
It's required. The Old Man in the Sea is required reading in Cuban school.
Isn't that amazing? Catherine Watson's Tales of Cuba. Fascinating material. We'll be right back.
Okay.
The Stillwater area is most fortunate to be the home of Valley Bookseller, located right on Main Street in downtown. If you or anyone you know likes to read, this is the bookstore for you. Books, book clubs, book specials, book events, and more books. Check out their website at Valley Bookseller. To see events, special sales, and staff recommendations. Call 651-430-3385. Valley Bookseller. Great books, great people. 217 Main Street North, Stillwater. They've been sitting on that shelf for years. Those special memories of your childhood on slides, videotapes, or 8mm film. You want to share them, but you don't have a way to do it. Now is the time to let images of the past do it for you, and you'll have those special memories to share with the family. Images of the Past can transfer your memories to DVD to be enjoyed anytime by the whole family. Think of the future, preserve the past. On Main Street in Stillwater at Images of the Past and at imagesofthepast.com.
At Hymie's Haberdashery, men never sacrifice fashion for weather. So no matter how cold it gets, you can still spot a Hymie's man by his impeccable taste and the confidence that only comes from a hot lather shave. Hymie's Haberdashery helps men look and feel their best with high-quality clothing cut and styled just for them. Create a look that's uniquely yours with tailored suits, overcoats, hats, and accessories that make winter blush. And at prices that won't melt your wallet. Hymie's Haberdashery, 400 St. Peter Street in downtown St. Paul. Online at Hymie's.
Hi, this is Sid Mark with more of the March sounds of Frank Sinatra and the Legend Continues from March of 1940 with Tommy Dorsey to Come Swing With Me, March of 1962, Billy May. On to Columbia at Axel Stordahl and in between Then and Again. This week's Sounds of Sinatra. My name is Sid Mark and you're invited.
Join us for the Sounds of Sinatra each Saturday at 3 on Club 1220 KLBB.
We are back giving you a virtual tour of Cuba, focusing on the Cuban people and what might lie ahead for all of us if the green light is given for normalized relations where we can go traveling to Havana and other points across Cuba. Diplomatic efforts are underway. Obviously, Catherine Watson, there is opposition in Congress and elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll be watching to see how that plays out. But in the event that that we are able to go, we are in for some real treats, I think, and some eye-openers.
So.
You know, just parenthetically, before we jump in here, all kinds of things are happening since the announcement of this effort to normalize relations between the two nations. The Minnesota Orchestra, Catherine, will see some immediate benefit from its May tour. It's going to Cuba in May. The Minnesota Orchestra. The orchestra has announced a Summerfest lineup that includes pianist Nachito Herrera and the Coro Extravavoces, a 23-voice choir that is called the pride of their homeland, Cuba. So, wow, cross-culture stuff.
Oh, yeah.
It has been going on to some degree.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's going to be stepped up now. And you know there have been some trade missions last weekend. A group of agribusiness leaders, including Cargill, other people from Minnesota, have been going there. It's a vast potential market to help the people there, especially who, you know, obviously the pockets of the corporations, but for the people, as you pointed out, they're on rations right
and
now.
And it's still an agricultural country, by and large, and not much manufacturing, but there's tons of land, and it's all been devoted to sugarcane in the past. So there are, the land is rich.
Okay.
It's just not producing enough of basic staples.
Let's do a little fantasy. In the event we are, let's just say we've got the green light, we can go now. Mm-hmm. What are we going to see? We're going to probably, either take a boat in or fly into Havana?
We'll fly into Havana.
And take us from there.
Okay. Probably you'll stay in a beachfront hotel or in one of the hotels in the historic heart of the city.
I will.
Okay. Yeah. The beaches are magnificent. And that was that after the Russians left, after the Soviet Union collapses and quits buying sugar, Cuba went into this incredible poverty period. Where people actually, there was malnutrition. They couldn't afford food. And the government began to invite foreign investment into beachfront hotels. So out away from Havana to the northeast is Varadero Beach, which is sort of like a really brand new Acapulco. It's not super new, but it's in the last 20 years. And that's where most tourists go or start. And then if you're in Havana, you're in one of the beautiful old restored hotels, and there are a number of really fine ones.
Mm-hmm.
So you do that, but you can also stay in private homes, and that's legal now.
Mm-hmm. You recommend that, too,
I do,
you?
Because the people will talk to you. But what you'd find is there's great architecture, there's great beaches, there is an educated population that would love to talk, and does, if you... One woman asked me, what do Americans think about this change with Cuba? And I thought,
oh boy.
Do they even know?
Yeah.
Most Americans probably don't. But Cubans are aware of all kinds of things. Their news is filtered, so they don't know.
Sure.
One guy told me he didn't like Obama because he was a socialist.
Really?
and you know this how?
Yeah. Well,
this is no news. But anyway.
They can't get CNN? They can't get things like that?
Well, you can if you have a bootleg connection.
Yeah, it's like the BBC in Nazi-occupied Europe, right?
Pretty much, yeah.
You can
get it under the table. You can get, because you're 90 miles from Havana, you are from Florida, you can get Univision. And some places I've stayed do. Mm-hmm. Others don't. Mm-hmm. And then you're stuck with Cuban TV, which is bland.
Okay.
Anyway.
Okay.
But people would be glad to see you. Mm-hmm. People are nice.
People are nice.
Yeah.
By and large, they seem to be honest. You have a wonderful mm-hmm. anecdote you told me about just a minute ago. Please
yeah.
share that with
every place I've gone, people say, because you're staying in their homes, people will say, be real careful when you go outside, because people, there are thieves. Well, maybe, but not compared to what I'm used to in other countries. Maybe
you're
even
about this
ours.
One?
Yeah. Yeah. Back streets of Havana look really, really rough. But you're quite safe because everybody watches everybody. And because they don't want to hurt tourists, because tourists bring money.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't want to damage them. But there's an ethic also. I was changing money in one of the... Because you can't spend dollars, okay. But I was changing euros into Cuban money mm-hmm. at one of the change kiosks in town. And there's a long line. And I was talking to a kid behind me in line. He's dressed as a street sweeper.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of.
Okay.
Works in a restaurant, does dishes, and he was making about $20 a month.
$20 a month.
Yeah, and that's not bad, actually. 20, counting tips, I think. Mm-hmm. But we're talking. So we get in at the same time to this little tiny kiosk. I take one window, he takes the next one. We're about 2 feet apart. When I got my money, I dropped, without knowing it, I dropped the equivalent of a $20 bill. Any place else in the third world, I would have expected the kid who's broke next to me to put his foot over it. No one would have known. I wouldn't even have noticed.
Would have grabbed it and scooped it and
put just put his foot over it, and I'd leave, and he'd pick it up.
Yep.
And this, I didn't know I dropped it until he said, "Madam, you dropped this," and picked it up. And that just blew me away, because he needs money like lots and lots of people do there.
Yeah.
And didn't steal.
Honesty trumps economic needs.
Yeah, so
it's amazing.
It takes some nerve as a single woman, lone woman, walking down a street with no street lights that looks like a bomb hit it, you know, or hit the one next door, and where it just looks scary.
Right.
And lots and lots of people are on the streets because there aren't cars mm-hmm. that back there, and people walk all the time. You walk down, and you're safe. People will talk to you.
As a travel writer for about 3 decades for the Minneapolis Star Tribune, you did this. You travel solo.
Yeah.
You decided where you'd go, and the Star Tribune gave you an allotment of money,
right.
and you had to divide it up and go. But you didn't spare yourself sometimes some dicey things, and you would go off by yourself. I think it was calculated risk.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you looked at it and weighed it, you've done this sort of thing before.
I have.
And there is still a certain amount of peril involved in
there is,
potentially.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's also detaching your mind from habit.
Right.
Because those streets do not look like anything an average tourist would drop down, which is why I keep saying, get off the restored streets, which are perfect,
right.
beautiful.
Amazing. Tell us about Old Havana's tiniest museum.
Oh, the House of Water.
La Casa del Agua.
The House of Water. Havana... It is an ancient Spanish city. It's probably the oldest one on the continent, or in this hemisphere. Founded, I think, 496 years ago. And to get water into the city, they had very deep wells and kind of aqueducts. Mm-hmm. And some of those cisterns are still there. And in the historic district, they've been preserved, because everything has been now, and restored. The House of Water is a tiny little hole in the wall, one-room thing in a stone wall near the Plaza de Armas, which is the core of the Spanish city. And in it is this one little old guy who was there 15 years ago, and he's still there. And what he does is give you fresh water from the same cup. I mean, you go in, and they advise people...
The same cup?
Yeah, there's one cup, and then there's a bunch of... There's a water purifier, I think.
Okay.
And Cuban healthcare is very good,
okay.
but there is this little flaw. They don't do paper cups, and they also don't have plastic bags, paper bags. There's none of that
really?
Stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a waste of money. Anyway, so he's got a cup, and he's got this water, and he gives it to you free. You can tip him. But but I met him on my, I think, the second day in Cuba 15 years ago. This guy rushes up to me and says, "Do you want some water?" And I said, "No."
No.
Why, he said, "Welcome to Cuba. I love Americans."
Wow.
It's one of my favorite moments. And the guy is still there, and he's still that same.
Fascinating.
He kind of pretended he knew me.
Yeah.
I said, "We met 15 years ago," and he said, Oh, of course.
Of course, of course, yeah.
Sweet old guy.
Catherine Watson. Can't forget you.
And they don't change jobs a lot either. So he's been there. That's his job. And he's 87 now.
Oh, man. Master of the water.
And I said, you know, well, we met 15 years ago, and he hugged me goodbye, yeah. And then he was crying.
Oh, really?
And it hit me. He's been in that... It's his whole life. The last 15 years of his life. Oh. And he knows we're not going to see each other again.
Yeah.
And so it hit me that that's why he was crying.
What a good heart. What a good
And then
soul.
It made me cry, so...
Yeah. Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Tears among the water, huh?
Yeah.
My goodness,
the tiniest
museum in old Havana, La Casa del Agua, the House of Water.
Yeah.
Kyle, if you had a chance, our producer, Kyle's in his low 20s age, what would you do if you're able to go, get off the plane in Havana? What's piqued your interest after hearing Catherine? What would you want to do, see?
You know, the whole thing just seems kind of magical. It's a stop in time. That
really?
Well said.
Really well said.
I don't know what the first thing I would do, but I know it just sounds wonderful.
It is amazing. Yeah. It's not like any place else in the world.
Yeah. Young people seem vibrant and happy.
Oh, yeah. And the dance.
I mean, Kyle could find his age group easily and have fun.
Yeah. In a heartbeat, actually.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there was never... the Soviet Union got real weird about a lot of things like how you dress, how you behave, whatever. That didn't happen so much in Cuba. Yeah. So... It doesn't, just the way people dress. People aren't rich, but they dress well. It's sexy.
This has been absolutely fascinating. You're taking us through the eyes of a veteran professional, very, very, perceptive traveler that you are. You're a historian. You're part of everything good, Catherine. Thank you. We have a wonderful sponsor on the show called Images of the Past, and we're going to hear from Mark Jensen in just a second here. But the restoration, preservation, that's a big deal with you and me and with Cubans.
Oh, yes. Yeah. The office of the historiador of Havana, the historian of the city, runs Old Havana, and it has very methodically for the last 20-some years restored bit by bit these great, gorgeous buildings and the streets that connect them. And they're now working on the National Theater and the Capitol, the National Capitol, which, as everybody says, is just like ours, but taller.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, and they're spreading out a little bit. What they do is restore areas that tourists want to come to, and the tourists spend money there. The money goes back into the coffers for restoration.
Wow.
It's a great system.
I'd call that enlightened.
I would, too.
That's just amazing. People are going to wonder, if and when we get to travel there, do I have to be able to speak Spanish pretty well to get by?
No.
Okay. Tell us about that.
Because they're well-educated. Lots of people speak English.
Okay.
Lots of people learn it in school. Mm-hmm. And anybody working in tourism will speak at least 4 languages.
Wow.
Because they have tourists from all over the place.
Oh, amazing. That's wonderful. It's humbling in a way, isn't it?
Yeah.
When are you going back?
I go back the minute the... Global Volunteers out of St. Paul has a program of actual volunteer work. It's the first one that's been allowed to really do something in development in rural Cuba starting this year.
Wow.
I go back with them.
Okay, wonderful. Catherine, thank you for being here. Where are you going next besides home?
I don't know.
You don't know. We're going to be reading about your Cuban venture, latest Cuban venture, in the L.A. Times.
L.A. Times in May, and I'm hoping MinPost before then, but I have to talk to them next week.
A big article you've prepared for the Los Angeles Times.
At the moment, it's almost a
book. Tiny newspaper, is it, Catherine? You've written for them before, haven't you?
I have.
That's wonderful. So thank you again for being with us. This is terrific.
You're welcome. Thanks for asking.
And do promise me to come back soon, okay? We'd love to hear from you and talk with you, and we learn so much from you, and you're a very nice person, too. Thank you so much. Okay. Catherine Watson. We are delighted to welcome one of our fine sponsors here on the Stan Turner Show, Mark Jensen of Images of the Past, a wonderful service located in downtown Stillwater. They take your photographs, they take your images, and do wonderful things with them, especially images, Mark, that are from a long time ago. You work with, your name is accurate, Images of the Past. How far back do some of these images go?
1840s, late 1840s, 1850s. Wow. In the case of daguerreotypes, that was the very first form of photography.
Right.
Daguerreotypes and ambrotypes were about the 1850s, and tintypes the 1850s as well. So I've worked with all of those, yeah.
So folks are bringing those in, actually?
Not as common. They're not as common, but you do see them.
But some from almost the dawn of photography,
exactly.
Huh? That's amazing.
And it's come a long way.
it really has. And to see your shop, I know I am a customer of yours.
You
can attest.
Very good one. Yeah.
Coming to you for years, and I love your work. You do a lot of service. You perform a lot of services: photo restoration and archival quality print reproductions. Mark, tell us about that.
Well, that's kind of our biggest thing. You know, getting people bringing in their 100-year-old photos that are not in the best of shape
anymore. I've seen some that have cracks in them and are discolored. Some pieces are missing.
Yep, rolled up, all sorts of things, yeah. And, you know, sometimes they're too far gone to fix, but a lot of times they can be fixed and brought back and reprinted onto a new paper that's going to last a long time. So
in your shop, you have before and after of the same image, and it's remarkable what you're able to do with some of those. It really is.
Well, thank you. Yeah, it's very rewarding to be able to fix a one-of-a-kind family photograph for somebody like that.
Mark Jensen of Images of the Past, also scanning services are offered there. Tell us about that.
Scanning is big right now, yes. People trying to get their images into the computer so that they can create books or email them off to other relatives, you know, sometimes over in Europe or wherever. So scanning slides, film, you know, negatives, some of the old Brownie negatives still, the old black and white Brownie stuff. And as well as shoeboxes full of prints.
And you can do enlargements, too. You've done
and
some bigger ones for me.
Bigger as well, yes.
Right. Well, you got an image, you got to have it framed, right? You do that, too.
I do that, too, yeah. Got a real nice selection of period frames that work well with the older photos. They're a little harder to find. You're not going to find them at the big box stores, and so that's... we got a real nice selection of those in ready-made sizes to fit the photographs. I also can do custom framing and matting as well.
So when you have a vintage image, you don't want to put it in a contemporary frame.
No.
You want to put it in a real, honest-to-goodness, vintage frame.
Sure.
They're gilded. They're beautiful works of art in themselves, aren't they?
Yeah.
Where do you find those?
Where do you find Images of the Past?
Yeah, that's where you find them. They come to you, and they're wonderful. I love the way you marry the image to the frame. It's really
all part
beautiful.
Of it, yes.
It is. Yeah. Now, a big deal, too, video transfers these days. We have still photographs. We have VHS. We have camcorder tapes. We have 8mm movie film, the whole movies.
Millimeter.
And these need to be transferred. Tell us to what and how you're doing.
Well, that's going to a digital process as well, to a DVD. So, you know, the movie film, 8mm, most of it came without sound. I think it wasn't until the late 70s, early 80s when they added sound to the Super 8. So 95% of what we see is soundless. Transferring that to a digital format, allowing people to see what they got. I can also put it to a hard drive if they want to go in and do some editing on their own and create their own DVDs.
Okay.
But
you have a website, Mark. Can we get a look in on your site as to some of the things?
Sure. Imagesofthepast.com is the website, and there's also a gallery of before and after samples on there, as well as some of the pricing for certain things, scanning and that type of stuff.
Folks, I would direct you to those before and after comparisons. They're just astounding, Mark, aren't they? You surprise yourself sometimes. What you can do, bringing back...
Sometimes, yeah.
You do. You're a professional, obviously. You've been doing this for years. How did you get in the business? How did this sort of thing attract you?
Well, I've always been into photography. I knew many years ago that I was going to be into photography in some way. And I started on with Images of the Past in the darkroom for about 10 years, just working in the darkroom every day, and then bought the business from the previous owner when everything was going digital. So.
Okay. Where do we find you? Where is Images of the Past?
Just down the street here, 218 North Main Street. Got to get the north in there, because otherwise you're going to be on the other end of the Stillwater.
Right.
But
go north, young man.
And I do have parking
woman.
As well. So.
Parking, too.
Yep.
Lots of good parking around. Images of the past. Mark Jensen, thank you so much. You have a wonderful service. You're a great guy, and I can give you a personal testimony that you do excellent work. Thank you for what you've done for me over the years, too.
Thank you, Stan.
All right.